Okay, so I want you to try a little mental exercise with me to kick things off. It's going to sound a bit like sci-fi, but just stay with me for a second. Picture yourself sitting at your desk. You open up a chat window, nothing fancy, just a blinking cursor, and you type a single sentence.
Right.
Maybe it's a scene from that novel you've been threatening to write for the last decade, and you hit enter.
And usually at this point, you'd expect text back. Or, I mean, maybe a static image if you're lucky and using the right tool.
Exactly. But in this scenario, you don't get text. You get video. And I'm not talking about a jittery 5-second clip that looks like a fever dream where everyone has seven fingers and melting faces.
We've all seen those.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about a full 10-minute 4K cinematic sequence. The lighting is absolutely perfect. The reflections in the puddles on the street actually obey the laws of physics. The characters move like real human beings, not like, digital puppets.
And just to clarify the stakes here for the listener, you didn't hire a VFX crew to do this. You didn't rent a massive render farm. You didn't even open any complex animation software. You literally just asked for it.
Right, you just typed a sentence. Now, if we were having this exact conversation in, say, 2023, you would absolutely tell me I was hallucinating.
Oh, totally. Or I would have just assumed you had a budget of $50 million and a team of like 300 visual effects artists working around the clock in a dark room somewhere.
But here we are. It is February 2026, and according to the material we are diving into today, that boundary, the one between imagination and digital reality, has been, and I quote, utterly erased.
It is a massive claim to make, but
Yeah.
when you actually look at the evidence laid out, it's really hard to argue against it.
So today we are unpacking a highly comprehensive piece of writing titled The Generative Video Revolution: Sora, Runaway, and Kling AI. It's by Majid Gurbanejad from Teaching Game. And folks, this isn't just your standard tech review.
No, not at all.
Gurbanejad frames this as a literal bloody battle for the future of media.
It really is a battle. And he uses this phrase early on that I just cannot get out of my head. He calls it an infrastructural earthquake. We aren't just talking about a cool new app update dropping. We are talking about the ground fundamentally shifting beneath the feet of every single creator, filmmaker, and storyteller on the planet.
I love that image. An infrastructural earthquake. So our mission for this deep dive is simple but really crucial. We are going to cut through the noise because if you're anything like me, your feed is completely flooded with these AI videos right now. Half of them look terrible, the other half look completely impossible, and you just don't know what's real anymore.
Yeah, the signal-to-noise ratio is terrible out there.
It's awful. So we need to figure out who is actually winning this war. Is it OpenAI? Is it Google? Is it some of the underdogs we haven't heard as much about?
And more importantly for you listening right now, how does this actually change the way you create? Are we actually looking at the death of the Hollywood studio model, or is this just a really, really expensive toy for tech bros?
That is the big question. And I think to answer that, we really have to start by shifting our entire mindset. The source makes this really important distinction right at the very beginning. It says we are moving away from mechanical software knowledge and moving directly into raw imagination.
This is key. This is the crux of the whole thing. Think about the traditional CGI workflow, like what Pixar or Marvel does for Blockbuster. If you want water to flow down a street in a movie, you need a physics engine.
Right.
You need a highly specialized technical artist to define the viscosity of the water, the gravity of the scene, the collision detection against the pavement. You are practically simulating that water molecule by molecule. It takes massive computing power and years of learning the specific software.
You basically have to teach the computer how physics works from scratch every single time.
Exactly. But these new generative video models, they don't calculate water, they dream it.
They dream it. That's wild.
Yeah, they do. They rely on deep neural networks that have watched millions upon millions of hours of video. They intrinsically understand what water looks like when it hits pavement. They know how light refracts through it. And it's not because they know the math formulas for refraction, but because they have literally seen it a billion times in their training data.
That is conceptually just wild when you really think about it. It's intuition versus calculation.
And that is exactly why the barrier to entry has completely collapsed. You don't need to know the math anymore. You don't need to know the physics. You just need to know what you want to see.
But in tech, knowing what you want and actually getting the machine to output it are two very different things. The source material lays out three main titans fighting in this arena right now. And what I found fascinating is that the author assigns them specific character types based on what they're technically best at.
It's a great framework. It really helps make sense of the chaos in the market right now.
Let's start with the one that really kicked off the massive hype wave, OpenAI Sora.
Right. If we're using the article's framing, Sora is what he calls the physicist of the group.
The physicist?
Yeah.
Why is that? Is it just because the creators are research scientists?
No, it's actually because of how the model behaves under the hood. When Sora first dropped, the wow factor wasn't just the sheer image quality, though that was great. It was what the source calls world rendering.
World rendering.
Yeah. When Sora generates a scene, it's not just painting pixels that look good next to each other on a 2D plane. It effectively builds a temporary 3D model of the world in its mind. It fundamentally understands 3D physics.
So it knows that up is up, down is down, that kind of thing.
More than that, it understands object permanence. If a man walks behind a tree in a Sora video, the AI knows he didn't just disappear from existence. He's just blocked from the camera's view. If he walks past a mirror, the reflection mathematically makes sense. If he drops a coffee cup, it falls at the correct speed for Earth's gravity.
Okay, that's that object consistency the article spent so much time talking about.
Precisely. In older AI video, or honestly even in some current competitors, you'd have this massive problem where a character turns their head and suddenly they're wearing completely different glasses, or their arm turns into a weird noodle if they move too fast. Sora keeps things solid. Characters do not deform. It completely respects the physics of the world it creates.
But wait, I can't just go download Sora right now and make my indie movie, can I?
No, you can't. And that is the massive downside here. The article refers to it as a closed ecosystem. It's essentially the Lamborghini sitting behind the velvet rope.
You can look, but you can't touch.
Exactly. The compute costs required to run a full world simulator like that for every prompt are astronomical. So while it's technically breathtaking, for the average creator, it's largely out of reach right now. It's a walled garden.
Okay, so Sora is the genius physicist locked in the ivory tower. Let's move to the second contender in the deep dive, Runway Gen 3 Alpha.
So if Sora is the physicist, Runway is the cinematographer.
That makes sense. I feel like I hear about Runway the most from actual working filmmakers.
And there's a good reason for that, because Runway realized something really smart early on. Directors don't actually care about physics simulations as much as they care about the camera itself.
Right. Control. They want absolute control over the shot.
Exactly. The source highlights that Gen 3 gives you incredibly granular camera controls. In the text prompt, or even using UI sliders, you can explicitly tell it to pan left, zoom in, or rack focus from the character in the foreground to the background.
Just really quick, for listeners who might not be huge film buffs, rack focus is that cool cinematic effect where the blurry background suddenly becomes sharp, right?
Yes, exactly. It directs the viewer's eye to where you want them to look. Runway allows you to literally direct the shot, not just describe a passive scene. It also has excellent lip-syncing capabilities natively. So if you are making a narrative film where human beings actually need to talk to each other and the camera needs to feel dynamic and handheld, Runway is absolutely your tool.
But again, reading through the deep dive, I'm sensing a pretty big flaw here, too. It's what I kind of think of as the Cinderella at midnight problem.
Ah, the duration limits. Yes.
Yeah.
The source strongly notes that Runway struggles hard when you push it past 10 seconds of continuous video. You start getting some pretty wild visual hallucinations.
The classic AI acid trip.
Right. Anatomy starts to get really weird. Forms get distorted. A character's hand might suddenly sprout an extra thumb, or the background melts. It is fantastic for short, highly controlled cuts, but it completely loses the plot if you try to make it hold a single unbroken scene for too long.
Which brings us nicely to the third major player. And this one seems to be the dark horse that caught basically everyone off guard. Kling AI.
Yes, Kling AI. The author calls this one the endurance athlete.
The endurance athlete. Okay, why?
This is a model from the Chinese company Kuaishou. And while everyone in the West was completely hyper-focused on OpenAI and Runway, Kling came out swinging with something neither of them could really do reliably. Long-form generation.
How long are we actually talking here?
2 minutes.
Wait, 2 minutes in one single generation go.
2 minutes. 1080p resolution. 30 frames per second. Unbroken. In the world of generative AI, where just getting 5 seconds of coherent video is considered a minor miracle, 2 minutes is an absolute eternity.
That changes the storytelling potential completely. You can actually let a dramatic scene breathe You don't have to cut to a new angle every 4 seconds to hide the glitches.
Exactly. And it's not just the sheer length of the generation. The source points out it really excels at simulating organic complexity. Muscle systems, flowing fluids, someone eating a bowl of noodles, things that usually make AI completely glitch out because they are so fluid and random, Kling handles that organic, messy movement beautifully.
That sounds incredible. So why isn't every single person just using Kling right now? Is it just because it's newer and we haven't heard of it?
Well, there is definitely friction there. The user interface is known to be pretty complex. And being a Chinese platform, the source notes, it has much stricter censorship and filtering on the prompts you can use. It's just not as plug-and-play or as open-ended regarding content as the Western tools might be. You have to actively navigate those restrictions to get what you want.
Okay, so we've got this fascinating three-way battle. The physicist with the perfect simulation, the cinematographer with the granular camera tools, and the endurance athlete with the long-form power. But just when we thought we finally understood the layout of the battlefield, a massive new challenger enters the ring.
Enter the giant, Google.
Yes, Google. The source mentions a huge new 2026 update involving something called Gemini Flow and the VO 3.1 model. Now, usually when Google enters a purely creative space, it can be hit or miss. What makes this one different?
Google isn't just releasing another video generator to compete on pixel quality. They're releasing a completely unified workflow. They identified what is probably the biggest pain point in this entire industry right now. Prompt engineering fatigue.
Oh man, I feel that in my bones. You sit there tweaking adjectives for hours. Cinematic lighting, no, wait, moody lighting, no, volumetric lighting. It's completely exhausting.
It kills the creative flow dead.
Right.
You spend way more time arguing with the text box than you do actually creating anything. Google's Gemini Flow solves this by making the entire process interactive visual.
How does that actually work in practice?
So instead of writing a highly technical prompt for one specific video clip, you feed Gemini a whole story. Or even drop a PDF file of your script right into the chat. Gemini reads it, breaks the narrative down into a full visual storyboard, and then writes the optimized technical prompts for every single scene automatically.
Wow. So it acts like a dedicated producer and a prompt engineer all at once. It does the heavy lifting.
It gets even better. You can then use a built-in feature called Whisk Animate. You take the static storyboard images, which are generated by Google's Imagen 3 model, and you apply organic motion to them right there in the interface. It's a complete end-to-end video production studio living inside a single chat window. Text, audio, visuals, all happening simultaneously without you ever changing tabs.
That sounds like it removes so much of the friction we were just talking about. You're not jumping between ChatGPT to write the script, Midjourney to get the base image, and then hauling that over to Runway for the video.
That's exactly the goal. It's about maintaining flow, hence the name Gemini Flow.
Okay, so that is the macro landscape. It's intense, it's moving incredibly fast, but let's pivot to you, the listener, right now. You're hearing this, you're getting excited, but you might be thinking, okay, cool, but how do I actually do this myself? Because the source material has a really, really great section specifically on the practical application.
Yes, and this is where we have to be completely real for a second. The democratization of art sounds amazing on paper, but you cannot just be a passive spectator in this process. You have to be a highly active creator.
The source is actually pretty blunt about this. It says if you simply type a car moving down a street into these tools, you are going to fail. You are going to get generic garbage.
You absolutely will. To get actual professional results that look like cinema, you need what the author calls a multi-layered workflow. You cannot just expect one magic button to do it all perfectly.
So let's walk through the ticking game workflow described in the article. It's a structured 4-phase process. What is step one?
Phase one is visual conception. And this is going to sound totally counterintuitive for a video workflow, but you do not start with video.
You start with a still image.
Always. You use a specialized image model like Midjourney or DALL-E 3 to generate a flawless base image. Mm. Because if the lighting, the anatomy, or the composition are wrong in the starting frame, the resulting video is going to look terrible no matter how good the motion AI is. You have to lock in the aesthetic first.
That makes total sense. It's basically storyboarding or concept art. If the concept art is ugly, the final movie will be ugly.
Exactly. Once you have that perfect high-resolution still image, you move to phase two, motion engineering. This is where you finally import that image into Runway or Kling.
So you're not asking Runway to create the visual and figure out how to move it at the same time. You're handing it the image and just saying, move this specific thing.
Correct. You are drastically reducing the cognitive load on the AI model. You inject the image as a starting point and write a motion-specific prompt. Then comes phase three, camera control. Here, you need to use highly specific cinematic terminology. You don't just say, look around the room. You say, zoom in, pan right, or rack focus.
You literally have to speak the traditional language of cinema.
You do. Yeah, I know what those terms mean. And finally, phase four, upscaling. The raw output from these generative video models isn't usually true 4K yet. It might be 720p or maybe 1080p if you're lucky.
Okay.
So you take that raw clip and run it through a dedicated tool like Topaz Video AI to polish it up to a crisp 4K at 60 frames per second.
It's really a bit of a digital assembly line.
It is an assembly line, but that's precisely how you get results that look like a multi-million dollar movie and not like a weird glitchy AI experiment on Twitter.
Now, the source gives us a golden formula for writing these prompts. I absolutely love stuff like this. It's immediate practical value. If you are listening, you might want to pause and write this down or just really commit the structure to memory.
That's a very robust formula. It works beautifully across almost all of these different platforms. The structure is simple. Subject plus action plus setting plus camera plus lighting.
Subject, action, setting, camera. Lighting. Let's hear the exact example from the article. I think it paints a really great picture of just how detailed you need to be.
Sure. Listen to the level of specificity here. Quote, a rust-plated cyborg, that's the subject actively sprinting through mud and debris, that's the action down a dark, rainy alleyway in Neo Tokyo, which is the setting. Long shot, camera tracking backward, that's the camera instruction. Mm-hmm. Neon blue and red rim lighting, and that's the lighting.
See, when you break it down like that, you can visualize it instantly in your head and notice the detail. It's not just a robot running. It's a rust-plated cyborg. It's not just moving. The camera is tracking backward. It specifies rim lighting.
That level of specificity is the key to the whole thing. The AI desperately needs those constraints to know exactly what you want. Otherwise, it just guesses based on averages. And you really don't want it to guess because it usually guesses wrong and gives you something boring.
So if we step back from the technical details of prompts and pipelines for a minute, what does this all actually mean in the grand scheme? The source talks about the democratization of art, which, let's be real, is a buzzword we hear a lot in tech. But Ourbanejad frames it in a way that's kind of harsh, actually.
He does. He puts it quite bluntly, and it's a sobering thought for professionals. He quotes, AI will not replace 3D artists. Rather, it will replace those unwilling to learn these tools.
Oof. That is the ultimate adapt or die moment for the industry.
It's just the reality of the situation. Look, the technical barrier is completely vanishing.
Yeah.
If you were the person whose primary value was that you knew how to navigate a ridiculously complex menu in Maya or Blender, or you knew the exact math to bake lighting textures that specific value is dropping towards zero, the machine can do the mechanical part now.
So if the technical operational skill isn't the value anymore, what is?
Taste. Vision. Storytelling. If you are the person who understands why a shot should be moody or how a specific story beat should emotionally land with an audience, you just got handed a superpower. You can finally execute your vision without needing to hire a team of 50 technicians to push the buttons for you.
It's literally shifting the power dynamic from the operator to the dreamer.
Exactly. And the article emphasizes heavily that there are simply no excuses left. It mentions this global community called the Tekken Army. And lists how these tools are available globally. Even in regions with heavy digital restrictions or economic sanctions like Iran, the author notes that there are workarounds to access these tools through gifts or free tiers for coding assistants like Cursor AI or Gemini Code Assist.
So the traditional gatekeepers are just gone. The studio heads who say no to your script are gone. The massive render farms you couldn't afford are gone. The only limit left is a deeply personal one. Is your idea actually good enough?
That is the question. And honestly, it's a terrifying question for a lot of creative people. Because now, if your movie or your short film sucks,
you can't blame the budget anymore.
You really can't. There's nowhere to hide. It's all in you and your imagination.
I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought from the source material that really struck me. It explicitly talks about the death of photography and the birth of a digital renaissance.
It's a highly provocative idea to end on.
It really is. Think about it. If technical skill is no longer the barrier, if I can literally type a single sentence and summon a photorealistic world into existence, what does that actually mean for the future of storytelling? What haven't we seen yet?
I think it means we are about to see stories we never would have seen before in human history. Because the people who had the weirdest, most beautiful, most unique stories in their heads didn't always have the money, the software skills, or the industry connections to get them made. Now, the budget is zero. The only limit is your mind.
That is the challenge for you, listening right now. Are you ready to stop just clicking buttons on software and start actually dreaming?
That's the real challenge.
Try out that golden formula tonight. Subject, action, setting, camera, lighting. Go make something weird. Go make something beautiful that only you could think of.
And we definitely want to hear about what you create with it.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today. We'll catch you in the next one.
See you then.